Hello, I'm Veronica Scaresbrick, Vatican Radio. And in a moment, the Archbishop of Brisbane in Australia, Mark Benedict Coleridge, will identify, at my request, three areas of mission he feels he would like to implement in his home archdiocese. If you like to identify three areas of mission.
Three areas of mission. Well, one is certainly passing on the treasures of the faith to the young. That can't be taken for granted, nor is it done by process of cultural osmosis as it was once upon a time. Once upon a time, you were born into a Catholic family, went to a Catholic school, you became a GLC, good little Catholic. Now, that is not true anymore. There are ruptures that have intervened. So to pass on the treasures of the faith to the young and to find the right words, images and gestures to do that, that's absolutely critical.
To ensure the future, in other words.
To ensure the future, not just in terms of recruits, but the young have a right to receive the glorious gift of the gospel. So we have to engage the young in all kinds of ways. But more generally, I would say that we have to engage the culture in new ways. It is utterly foreign to the Catholic Church simply to turn our back on the culture and talk to ourselves. And very often we do seem marginal in cultures like the one that I know best in Australia. So we have to find new ways of engaging the culture with words and images and gestures that communicate, because very often the way we're saying things or doing things isn't communicating. I know this as a teacher. When you're teaching, you can look down and see the glazed look on your student's face and you think, well, I've got to find another word or image to communicate. And if you do find the right word or image, you can see that the penny drops and the scales drop from their eyes and you think, ah, finally I have communicated. Well, that's where we are as a church. We've got to find that kind of thing. The third thing I would say is that we have to become a more contemplative church, that none of this will happen unless we have a new and deeper encounter with Jesus Christ crucified and risen. By that I mean Jesus Christ is never just a role model or a wise teacher whose teachings we must strive to follow, or a role model from the distant past whom we must strive to emulate. That is simply not what Christianity is. We need to encounter him as presence and power in the here and now, and that new, as I would call it, contemplative encounter, seeing the face of Jesus, hearing his voice, is where any genuine newness will start. So they're the three things that I would identify. I could go on.
What about the liturgy?
The liturgy is absolutely fundamental because it's the prime locus of that encounter with Jesus Christ, who speaks to us in a unique way in that liturgical moment, and who gives himself as the Word made flesh in the sacrament of the bread and wine. So I think the whole process of liturgical renewal, is the ongoing journey of liturgical renewal, is crossing a new threshold at this moment. And the crucial thing to remember at a threshold moment like this is that the liturgical renewal that has its impetus from the Second Vatican Council, though its roots lie in the Council of Trent, was all about generating new energy for mission. It wasn't about some kind of rather fussy ecclesiastical liturgical interior decorating. It was all about enabling a more powerful, more energizing encounter with the risen Christ in word and sacrament that would generate the new energy for mission. So I do think the liturgy is fundamental. Over the years I've been bishop, my energy is almost totally absorbed at times by the retranslation of the Roman Missal. And that has convinced me that the liturgy is fundamental to this new surge of gospel energy that I think the Church requires and to which we've been called by the Holy Spirit. It's by no means accidental that at the Second Vatican Council, the great grace given to the Church in the 20th century, as John Paul II said, that the Council began with the liturgy. And the very first of the great documents of the Council was Sacrosanctum Concilium, on the liturgy. So I do think the liturgy is fundamental in order to generate that energy for mission.
Anniversary of the first session. Second Vatican Council is coming up in October, and the Pope has launched a year of faith to coincide with that, and it's connected to new evangelization. What do you think the effort really is? Is it to bring new energy into the Church?
Well, the Pope believes, and I actually think he's very acute in his analysis, that there is a genuine crisis of faith in the Church at this time, even among the devout. Problems are not sort of, as it were, merely strategic or in some superficial sense ideological. The fundamental challenge is at the point of faith. And where, therefore, and this sounds almost crude to say it, but where does God stand in the midst of things? Because many people, one is tempted to say most people, live their lives as if God didn't exist or doesn't exist. So I think the Pope is right in saying that there is this fundamental crisis of faith. And even among the devout, that sense of the fear of hell and the longing for heaven, the sense of this world being only a pilgrim place where we journey into the fullness of life, even that is severely diminished. And that's part of the crisis of faith that Benedict XVI, I think, has described very accurately. So I think in part what Benedict XVI is doing is saying that that's what the council was about. And I think, again, he's right in the sense that the Second Vatican Council was, in part at least, the Church's response to the dual apocalypse of World War I and World War II. I mean, the question people asked after World War II with the ash heaps of Auschwitz and Hiroshima was, is there a future? I mean, in part, that question is there a God at all? Elie Wiesel, the famous Jewish author who spent years in Auschwitz, said that everyone emerged from the death camps asked how could there possibly be a God after the hellhole that they had seen. And I think the world, in many ways, is still asking that question and is still in the shadow of the twin apocalypse of World War I and World War II. So that I think what the Pope is doing is pointing to what was at the heart of the council and remembering that he was one of the Pariti. I think John Paul II, through his long reign as Pope, was saying the same thing. This was the heart of the council. That phrase, new evangelization, is never found in the council. But what John Paul II was saying, but that's what the council was all about. And Benedict XVI, in his different way, is saying, what the council was all about, and let's remember it in this 50th year, the council was all about a resurgence of the power of faith. And I might just add that before the Pope proclaimed the year of faith in Australia, the Australian bishops had proclaimed in Australia a year of grace from Pentecost to Pentecost. So we announced this to the Pope when we were here for the ad limina visit in October. And about 2 weeks later, the Pope proclaimed a year of faith. So we like to think that he thought our idea was so good, he'd proclaim his own year. And what we've been saying to our people is there's a very elegant segue between the year of grace and the year of faith. Grace is God's gift to us, and we have to enter into that mystery more and more deeply, take hold of the fact, the gift. But faith is the human response to the gift, the accepting of the gift. So there's no abrasion of any kind between the year of grace and the year of faith. Instead, an elegant segue, a harmony between gift and response.
And you were listening there to the Archbishop of Brisbane in Australia, Mark Benedict Coleridge. Our thanks go to him. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick.